くれまグチオン、アクエマルイヴトン、バリブウィンナテンオン、ベラメイジュルク、I'll make you double take, soon as I walk away. Call up your crowd with practice just in case your neck break. Ooh, tell me what you gonna do. Cause I'm about to make a scene, double up
in the closet of our discretion. By Firefight, read by Miss Izzy. Fandom, Critical Role. Caleb is the first to notice, out of all of them. The first to catalog the trend, out of an eye for detail that cannot be switched off or ignored. There are many strange and unusual customs in the dynasty to get used to for a ragtag bunch of adventurers like them, and while this is quite tame in comparison to some, once noticed, it is hard to ignore. He has always had a mind for counting. A compulsion, even, one might say, to track and organize. It comforts him to know these things, even though the systems by which he does so are often incomprehensible to anyone but him. So when he finally sees, and pays true attention to, Essex's arm slipping free of his mantle and extending to point something out to them further down one of Roshona's busy streets, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Caleb counts the flashes of color like it's instinct. The fine bone lines of Essex's hand, marked by the triangular cut of translucent fabric hooked around his middle finger that then hugs the rest of his arm upwards. The pale silver line of a shirt cuff encircling his wrist, followed by another, just a quarter of an inch back in dazzling lilac. A darker tone follows next, before a bell-bottom sleeve of indigo with embroidery around the end that matches the inner layers, and maybe that's the end of it. But Caleb cannot be sure, because the rest of Essex's body is covered and concealed by the dark fall of his cloak. 6, that makes it. 6 layers in total. It seems excessive for a day in which the weather is relatively balmy, but that is all Caleb thinks to note about Essex's fashion sense. At least this time. After they are given the Jor House, Essex deigns to teach Caleb a little dunamancy, lured in by a spectral cat's paw that Caleb is not entirely sure should have actually worked, but seemed a good idea at the time. They go to the study, and Essex reaches up, undoing the catches at the front of his cloak as if to accommodate for the warmer air inside. As it falls open, Caleb can see he has the usual slim elven build, outlined in rich threads he cannot even begin to estimate the expense of, but appreciates on a subconscious level all the same. Though, of course, most of his attention is taken up by the spellbook Essex has just snapped into existence. 2 spells, that is what his cat's ire has earned him. Caleb follows the elegant point of Essex's index fingers to the runes and diagrams on the page, listening carefully to the explanation of what each spell does. Essex has neatly trimmed fingernails, painted black, and his fingers glitter with an array of jeweled silver rings that match the earrings lined with the long swoops of his ears. The palms and backs of his hands are totally covered by a delicate latticework of white lace, in frothing patterns that remind Caleb of waves. And just like the previous times he has seen Essex, the fabric continues up his arms to disappear beneath the shifting layers of his outer clothing. Periwinkle blue, he notes for the next piece, eyes somehow turning to the elegant arc of Essex's wrist, just as much as the magic he's so hungry for. The etching is done in silver thread, a common theme that is echoed in almost every other garment that follows after. All of them are made in ever-deepening shades of blue, eventually ending in the deep indigo of the tunic wrapped around Essex's torso. The sash tying it at the middle matches the initial periwinkle, and once Essex draws back to let Caleb start his copying, he can't help but notice the same is also true of the soft trousers he can glimpse Essex wearing through the open slits in the tunic's side. 7 this time, he thinks. 7 layers of fabric when he has the mantle on, and it's a wonder Essex isn't sweating beneath them. Maybe he would be if he had to walk everywhere instead of float, but there's no sign of discomfort about him, just a cool, calm, collected elegance Caleb finds both enviable and intriguing, from the very tips of his perfectly coiffed hair to the shiny points of his shoes where they hover above the floor. A silver line also marks his eyelids, Caleb realizes belatedly, and he is close to opening his mouth to ask about the whole ensemble, before Essex turns his head and raises an eyebrow in his direction. Do you require further explanation? Ah, no. The question dies in his throat before it can begin.
Caleb braves a small smile before he turns his eyes back to the pages in front of him, then opens his own book to begin copying the spells. This is all wonderful, truly. Fascinating. I am very grateful for your generosity. Essex Regard stays focused on the back of Caleb's neck. These are only minor spells, as I said. Their true merit lies in how you use them. As is the case for all magic, I should think. Essex says nothing in response to that, but as the scratching sound of Caleb's quill fills the space between them, he can feel the Shadow Hand's eyes continuing to watch his every move. After that, it becomes a habit to count whatever layers of Essex's clothing he can see at every encounter, and even without asking, Caleb thinks he is starting to put together a pattern. It helps, of course, that he is now no longer the only one who has noticed this trend in the dynasty, even if he may be the only one paying such distinct attention when it comes to Essex. A realization he quickly shoves deep, deep down inside him once he has it, past the rationalization that he is doing so only out of idle curiosity. Something which becomes most notably clear when Jester sweeps back into the Jor house after a spontaneous shopping trip, only to fall dramatically down on the sofa opposite the chair Caleb is sitting in before bemoaning the complexities of dynasty fashion to him. So I was like, I would like one outfit, please. And then the guy was like, okay. And he brings out three dresses. And I said, no, no, these are all beautiful, but I would like only one dress, please. And he just looked so confused, like he didn't understand what I was saying. Then he tried to explain, and I tried to explain, and it's so weird. Did you know everyone in the dynasty is always wearing at least three layers at all times, Caleb? And that's not even including underthings. Oh, yes, of course, Essex would be wearing underthings as well, Caleb thinks, mentally upping his previous tallies by one each as the slight blush spreads across his cheeks. He roughly clears his throat. Ah, really? Yes, apparently it's like the big thing, and then the fancier you are, the more layers you have to wear. I don't even know how they do it. Wouldn't you just be super boiling hot all the time? One would think. Caleb squeezes the fingers of his hands tighter around the pages of his book. He wonders how, then, the Mighty Nine must appear to most citizens in Roshona, especially the most brazen among them, like Bo, always with her abs out. Which, now that he thinks about it, probably means that many of the stares she has personally gotten from the citizenry are for reasons other than just the strangeness of seeing a human in the city. He should probably warn her about that at some point, before she ends up punching someone. I tried asking why, and he said a lot of stuff. Most of it I didn't get, but apparently it started off as a way for the upper classes to show off how wealthy they are depending on the materials and dyes and stuff, and then turned into all these rules and expectations for everyone else as well because, like, I don't know, modesty or something. She gives a sharp-toothed grin, waving her hand like she doesn't know the meaning of the word. They use spider and worm silk for most of their clothes, and sometimes wool, but fabrics like cotton are actually super expensive here because they don't have enough sunlight to grow their own and they have to import it. That's super weird, right? Back home, it would be the other way around. Back home, Caleb isn't sure anyone would be willing to touch a dress made of spider silk with a 10-foot pole, unless, of course, they were like Jester. It is indeed very curious. And interesting. Definitely interesting. Perhaps he should see if he can find a book on dynasty textile history as well as their fashion the next time he goes out shopping for himself. Jester continues rambling in this vein for a while, and Caleb listens politely, filtering out the important information from her wilder speculations. He also wonders if he should ask Essex himself about how he and his companions can try to dress more appropriately for their new surroundings next time they see him. But seeing as how he has yet to bring it up to them of his own accord, Caleb can only imagine it is not actually that big a problem. That or they are just being written off as savage outsiders, excused from the realms of civilized behavior by their hosts by default, regardless of their greater status as heroes of the dynasty. Out of the two, he is not quite sure which option he prefers. Caleb listens, and he studies, and he counts. A little research matches Jester's words alongside his own hypotheses, as he finds out that, indeed, the dynasty puts a lot of emphasis on status being depicted by how many layers of clothing you wear. They even have specific words for undercommon for each level, as well as terms for the art of communicating all of those layers to the eyes of onlookers without compromising any illusions of modesty. or, almost as importantly, the ability to move. It is all about the tailoring, as much as the materials and details. A way of folding or pinning one layer back to reveal another. A tastefully cut slit in one piece that gives away the rest. Caleb thinks of the way Essex's sleeves will pull back in barely inch-long increments along his arms, and somehow, ridiculously, feels his cheeks heating, even though never once has he glimpsed any of the skin past his hands. For the base citizenry, three layers is considered enough, minus underthings. But as one rises higher in status, more are added. At Essex level, the level of both high nobility and political position, Caleb finds that a minimum of 6 is expected, and that is in the most casual of situations. When it comes to more formal events, petitions in court, dinner between dens and weddings, that number can rise to 7, 8, or even 9. For Umavi, the most respected and highest of all beings in the dynasty besides the queen herself, that number rises to 12. White cotton, pure and untarnished, is preferred for their outfits. A reflection of the 12 sides of the beacons, and a signal that they have reached perfection through consecution, making them therefore the closest to truly understand the Luxon. There is no information Caleb can find about how many layers the Bright Queen wears, but he remembers that the armored dress he saw her in before did not seem friendly to an excess of cloth beneath it, and wonders if perhaps her status as a divinely appointed monarch makes her the exception to the rule. Armed with this new knowledge, his silent appraisal of Essex's outfits continues to grow. Endeavor made easier as the group begins to spend more and more time in his company, both out of necessity and Jester's determined efforts to befriend him. Invitations to dinner go unanswered, even as Essex agrees to teleport them all across Wildmount in pursuit of the cult of the Angel of Irons after they enslave Yasha. As he keeps the imprisoned Scourger woman, Caleb so painfully sees himself reflected in alive a little longer at his request, then crushes her ribcage in an impressive display of dunamanic power after she almost kills him in the Dungeon of Penance. In the Lotus and Greenwood, Caleb reaches out and lays a hand on Essex's arm in a mixture of apology and self-admitted manipulation after miscommunication means they teleport to the wrong end of the forest, hoping it will persuade him to take them where they actually mean to go. Which works, even though Essex still seems annoyed by the end of it. And as he pulls his arm away from Caleb's hand, all Caleb can think of suddenly is the many layers of fabric separating his fingers from Essex's dark skin. It's ridiculous, the way it makes his cheeks heat and the tips of his ears burn, how his heart beats a little faster inside his chest even after Essex is gone. One would think it would be the bearing of skin that would make one flush, yet here he is, squirming instead at the thought of its absence. It is not the right place, nor is it the right time for such thoughts. Thoughts Caleb isn't sure he should even be having in the first place, given everything else they have going on. Yasha needs them. His own past still continues to tug at his sleeve with its need for resolution. And this growing crush, undeniable now despite his best efforts, is as inappropriate as it is impossible to follow through on. Essex is handsome, intelligent, skillful, and secure in his position. And Caleb watches Jester walk past him with a playful flick of her blue tail. He already has one unrequited love in his life. Alongside the old aches of loves lost previous, he does not need another. They go. They fight. They return. They disappear into the happy fun ball for a month after Yusa gets himself into trouble investigating its mysteries, before finally taking down Oban once and for all. Yasha now free and back alongside them where she belongs. After which, Essex finally takes them up on their invitation to dinner, appearing at the front door of the Jor house with a criminally expensive bottle of wine in hand once they make it back to Roshona. He takes his mantle off at the door, a gesture Caleb notices at once, the sleeves of his robes beneath it once again running a gradient of dark to light. This time, the innermost layer covers both Essex's index and middle fingers in shimmering silver before extending up his arm. And despite himself, Caleb cannot help watching every elegant gesture of his hands throughout dinner, feeling hot under the collar even before they make it to the hot tub. Once there, the purple in Essex's cheeks turns darker as they all undress before him. A possible faux pas, Caleb wonders if he shouldn't be doing more to stop, except that he himself is being swept along by the momentum of a very pleasant evening, and though he had plenty of opportunities to, Essex himself has raised no real objections, Though that may be purely out of ingrained politeness rather than actual comfort. Caleb slips into the heated water, sighing out of habit even before he is truly settled in. He expects to see Essek just continue sitting at the edge of the pool, despite the cajoling of the Nine's more outgoing members, only to freeze in place when he instead sees him reach down and begin undoing the buckles on his shoes. He does not strip, far from it, but there is an undeniable spark that shoots through Caleb's veins as he watches Essek carefully roll up the cuffs of his dark plum trousers, then slip the stockings from his feet. His ankles are delicate, like his fingers, like his wrists, and the skin of his calves is hairless, as Caleb just barely has the time to note before they slip into water, barely a foot from his side. Ridiculous, he thinks again, cursing himself inwardly, even as he fights to control his outer expression. Essek is only sitting on the edge of the tub, barely dipping his feet into the water, and yet Caleb is left feeling the same way he did the first time he, Aedwulf, and Astrid snuck out of Solstrice to visit some of the seedier areas of Rexentrum as teenagers. Hell, he actually feels like a teenager again, the more and more time he spends around this damnably attractive elf. It is good that hot water can explain the reddening of his skin in this case, otherwise the evening might take a very different turn beneath the eagle eyes of his friends. His friends, who of course have zero hesitation in broaching the subject, Caleb himself has only been comfortable studying passively from afar until now. Seriously, dude, Beauregard says, once they've exhausted all other topics of discussion and Essek's hair has started to frizz delightfully in the steam. Aren't you roasting and all that? Essek's ears twitch. He had carefully arranged the draping fabric of his layered robes around him when he sat down, and now there is a shimmering sheen of sweat on his skin that cannot be denied, though, of course, he tries anyway. I am fine. It's okay if you want to take off another layer, Essek. Even just a little one, Jester chimes in. I mean, look at us. We're all pretty much naked. We're not going to judge. If possible, Essek's cheeks grow even brighter at the reminder. Thank you, but it would not be appropriate. Why not? It's Veth this time, blunt as always, and the only other member of the group not entirely in the water. If the man isn't comfortable, Caduceus begins, gently chastening in a way only he can be. Essek clears his throat, fingers momentarily dancing over the fastening at the high collar at his throat. There are certain rules and expectations when it comes to the removal of clothing in the dynasty. You may have noticed by now that the amount one wears often denotes rank, as does the embroidery used. Removing a layer is akin to, his ears twitch again, causing the intricate chains hanging from them to chime. Increasing intimacy is, I believe, the right term. I think that's usually the case for removing clothing anywhere, Ford says, with a certain amount of dry humor. Yes, but no. It is, Essek sighs, difficult to explain, perhaps, in your terms. One might remove one layer or undo a fastening in the presence of friends, another one with family. It may be the acknowledgement of a superior, a peer, or even to communicate that you are. He trails off for a moment, the color in his cheeks intensifying before he then clears his throat. There are many connotations, many meanings, to how one wears one's clothing in our society. That sounds super complicated, dude. Essek tilts his head in acknowledgement at Beau. It is certainly a lot to try and understand when you have not been raised to it, that's true. Jester suddenly perks up, her tail waving above the water. You took off your mantle at the door, she says to Essek. I did. And you took off your shoes and rolled up your pants to join us in the hot tub? Yes. She gasps, clasping her hands to her cheeks. Is it because we are your friends? Is it because you love us so much? It is. Essek sweeps his hand across his face, and curiously, his violet eyes jump to Caleb for a moment. Caleb, who jolts suddenly at the memory of Essek unfastening his cloak in front of him during their first magic lesson, and now finds his mind spiraling with all the possible meanings Essek might have meant to convey to him then, meanings he is largely too ignorant to pick up on still. Yes, Essek says finally, it is because you are all my friends. Jester cheers, even though it is not the first time Essek has acknowledged that fact this evening. Sweeping forward through the water, she boldly reaches out to pat one blue hand across his calf, either not seeing or purposefully ignoring the way Essek's breath hitches at the contact, and possibly the closer proximity to her cleavage as well. Thank you, Essek! I think that's really great of you! And don't worry, sometime soon we'll be such super great friends, I know you'll have no problem at all getting naked in front of us. Essek chokes. Caleb's face turns almost as red as his hair. Meanwhile, everyone else laughs good-naturedly before Beau suddenly stops, her mouth hanging open in sudden thought. Shit, wait, does that mean we've been unintentionally offending people walking around wearing our normal outfits the entire time we've been here? Should we have been layering up as well? Oh my gosh, is it like we've been flashing everyone this whole time? Jester joins, a whole new kind of wicked delight now sparking in her eyes as she clasps her hands to her cheeks. Essek, have you been getting all hot under the collar every time you look at me? Are we the scandal of Roshona? That is... Caleb watches as Essek raises his eyes to the ceiling, seemingly determined to look anywhere but at her, as he painstakingly begins to explain the differences in societal expectations when it comes to foreigners and those native to the dynasty. The next day, in Essek's laboratory, he, Caleb, and Nott weave together in a symphony of discovery, passing the notes of Halas's ancient transmutation magic between them. It is wonderful, exhilarating, and easy in a way Caleb had never known magic could be when working with others. By the end of it, they've completed a spell that should finally be able to give back Nott her true form, and the happiness Caleb feels upon knowing that. He reaches out, drawing both Essek and Nott into a hug at either side. Nott's return of the embrace is enthusiastic. Essek's a little more hesitant, but genuine all the same. It is only when he draws back a little that Caleb notices. The long robe Essek had been wearing when they got here, a sleek thing made of black and silver brocade that was just thin enough to hint at all the layers beneath, is missing from his shoulders. Caleb looks on instinct, gaze traveling across the room, to find it draped over the back of a high chair, and he finds himself a little dizzy suddenly, wondering when it was removed. It means something. He knows it does now, for Essek to have diminished himself down to only four layers before them, given he was already missing his mantle and usual outer robes when the Nine arrived at his house. Just exactly what is the question? When he returns his eyes to Essek, the other man meets his gaze unflinchingly, dark and intense, joyful and proud of their accomplishment. In his chest, Caleb's heart does its traitorous thump-thump again, and for a moment he forgets that Nott is also with them now, particularly when Essek raises his head just a little more, and a flash of gold draws Caleb's attention down his throat. The very topmost button of his high-collared shirt is undone. Ah! He, for a moment, almost feels like he cannot breathe. So much of the nuance of the dynasty's unspoken clothing language still escapes him, but this, and Essek's deliberate motion to make sure he notices it? Caleb's attention is soon pulled away to the potential of actually attempting the spell right here and now, as well as the fact that the rest of the Nine are still waiting downstairs for them. But the memory, the motion, sits with him in the back of his mind through all the days following, even as they once again leave Roshona behind them in a madcap quest to lift Nott's curse. Desran Thane does not wear many layers of clothing. Desran Thane is of Nicodranas, not Roshona. Staggered by betrayal, Caleb does not think much of this until it is far too late. But alone on the deck of the Ball Eater, looking up at the night sky with his heart still stinging, he tries not to think how diminished Essek had looked without his usual finery when they revealed him, almost naked, with all his sins laid to bear in more ways than one. He feels like he should have seen this coming, even as he doesn't know how he possibly could have. Essek had been playing this game long before the Nine arrived in the Dynasty with one of his stolen beacons in tow, and if it weren't for a chance encounter and suspicion, may have even gotten away with it completely. Caleb almost wishes he would have, in exchange for this ache he now feels deep inside him. But as it is, reality is painful, and he stows all the memories of soft cloth, dark skin, and open buttons deep down in the back of his brain, where hopefully they cannot bother him any further. They do not see Essek again for a long time after the peace talks. Rumblecusp and Traveler Khan is a thankfully involved and distracting adventure, after which they return to the Empire seeking to follow up on the job offer made to them by Vesta Ragna to travel to Isilcross, and from there, the past lives of both Caleb and Molly Mock proceed to confront them in rapid succession. culminating in a desperate and headlong chase that eventually thrusts them back into Essex company once again. Hyzelcross is cold. Freezing. Everyone wears layers here out of necessity rather than fashion. Gone are the tasteful cuts and gaps in Essex clothing, the flagrantly excessive fastenings and details in the cloth. Instead, everything is thick wool and fur, some of it enchanted against the cold, but designed in a way that he is covered completely from neck to toe, almost like a floating block of a person. Caleb should not miss the design work of before. Not now. But as the broken barrier of trust between them slowly starts to mend, his eyes begin to pick out details once again. Like how the thick fur that has replaced the heavy metal of Essex's mantle will tickle at the edges of his chin, causing him to reach up and brush it away from his skin more often than he realizes. The way his ears twitch more frequently, both out of nervousness and seemingly missing the usual weight of his earrings. Essex's dark gloves are fastened with pearls, a fact Caleb only notices when he lifts his hands to cast a spell and the white fur cuffs of his quilted coat slip further down his arms to reveal them. They grow closer. Excited with all the possibilities Eor contains for both their research, they discover mysteries that ache to be solved and show off magic to each other like first-year students at school, even as the stakes of their greater mission rise higher and higher. Then they are in Cognosa, and all things become serious. In the last hour they have before confronting Lucien, Jester prepares them all a hero's feast, and there, in the warmer air of the Flesh City, Essex loosens his fur collar just enough that Caleb can see the tiny snowflakes stitched in around the base of his throat, as well as familiar symbols he is now certain, from consulting Beau, speak to denote Essex's status as a new soul alongside his political importance. So engrossed in studying them, he almost misses the moment Essex sheds his gloves, carefully unpicking the pearl buttons one by one. His hands are completely bare beneath them, nails unpainted, and his fingers bereft of rings. A new novelty Caleb has never seen before. Soon we may go to our deaths, Essex says, voice startlingly calm in sharp contrast to the way his throat bobs as he swallows. I would grant you all the best chance I can for our victory before then. Pearl by pearl, he gifts as many of them as he reasonably can a sliver of possibility in the form of fortune's favor. And yet it seems only when his bare fingers press against Caleb's forehead that they linger. Are you ready for this, Widow Gass? He asks, violet eyes just as unwavering as they were before, when they stood together with a thrill of discovery humming beneath their skin in Essex Towers. Caleb breathes slowly. It feels like the spot on his skin is on fire from his own flames. There is a greater benediction in this than just the magic, he knows, because bare hands have never been a necessity for casting the spell before. We have already bent reality to our will once this day, mein Freund. Why not a second time? Essex smiles at him then, white teeth with their small fangs bright against his face. And though there is nervousness in it, there is determination, too. His hand withdraws, and before he can quite think about it, Caleb is already reaching for his own store of pearls. May I? He asks. His own gloves are fingerless, but he takes them off anyway, seeking to reciprocate in kind, whatever Essex's meaning. Violet eyes widen slightly, flicking to the pearl he's holding, and the seconds seem to stretch before Essex nods his assent. His dark skin is cool where Caleb's hand meets his forehead, fingertips brushing against soft strands of hair long since loosened from their coif, and for once uncaring of the staring eyes of his friends, he leans in close. Close enough that no one but the two of them will be able to hear his next words as he finishes the incantation and the pearl dissolves into invisible fate. We have so much left to do in this world, you and I. So promise me you will use this and everything else in your power to survive. I will not forgive you if you die before our business together is done, Thalis. Our business together? Essex murmurs, and Caleb does not elaborate, thinking he may have said too much already. And yet, not enough. The moment lasts a good 30 seconds more as they stare into each other's eyes, and Caleb's fingers start to feel the strain of remaining curled against Essex's forehead, longer than he can reasonably excuse for casting the spell. It is only Beau's sharp wolf whistle that breaks them apart in the end. Well, Caleb asks as he leans away from him, watching as Essex begins the intricate task of fastening his gloves back on. The movements are just as elegant and controlled as his spell casting, and Caleb thinks that perhaps he could watch such a thing all day if he had the means to. I promise, Essex says, voice still low and meant only for Caleb's ears, to do everything in my power to ensure our survival. It is not quite what Caleb asked for, but as the group prepares to move out as a whole, it will have to do. No one dies, at least not permanently. They save the world, as well as the soul of a friend. In the safety of the Blooming Grove, Essex sheds his outer cloak and coat, but remains sweating in the rest even before Trent Ichthyon attempts to burn down the Clay's home with them in it. Anything Caleb might have thought or wanted to say to him then is soon swept away by that. His former teacher close at hand, if subdued, and his former friends, former lovers and classmates, now rocketed into a reality where Ichthyon's will no longer constantly hangs over their heads. There is the possibility of real justice for them all now, but they will still have to work for it, and that in itself is no small thing. Sometime in the middle of his worrying, his pacing, his frantic and frenetic planning with Beau, and when she is amenable, Astrid, Essek exchanges his soft rabbit's fur gloves for rose-printed ones painted by Jester. He seemingly forgets about the richness of his clothing, staining the expensive fabric with grass and mud as he kneels down in the dirt alongside Caduceus and Clarabelle to try his hand at gardening. And with it goes another layer. Caleb only really notices when it comes time to say goodbye to him, when he draws Essek in close, and hit suddenly by all the opportunities lost here, because as it turns out, he is still not ready to take that step, presses a soft kiss to his cheek, and begs him not to be a stranger. It is enough, he hopes, registering the lightness of Essek in his arms that has nothing to do with any gravity spell before he lets him go. Many months later, Caleb is living in a small house in Rexentrim that does not yet feel like his own. He has not seen Essek again since he left the Blooming Grove, and even the rest of the Nine, minus Beau and Yasha, who are also in the city, flit in and out of his life with ever-growing infrequency. It is strange to be moving on now after the crazy, strange, helter-skelter year they spent together. But also comforting in a way, to feel like he is finally able to put down roots again for the first time since he was a teenager. There is nothing for him to run from anymore, now that Trent is behind bars, and though there is still work to be done in rooting out conspiracy in the Empire, he can finally take the time to breathe again. There's so much he can think of what he wants to do, discovering, studying, teaching, that is almost dizzying in its potential. But it is to Eeyore that he finds his thoughts returning most. The lingering puzzle of its magic and the T-Doc they had found, the final answers it could provide to the goal he had set himself when he first broke out of the asylum, as well as the plan he has been quietly obsessing over since. And of course, Essek's proposal that they return there together at some point. Alone. To exchange theories, as he called it. It is not as if he hasn't spoken to Essek at all since he left them. Usually facilitated by Jester whenever she is around and launching into her daily communication with him. But once, just once, there had been a message of Essek's own directly into Caleb's ear. A soft, almost nervous inquiry about his well-being, as well as a commendation of his conduct after news of Ichthyon's conviction had inevitably reached Dynasty's ears. He really should learn the sending spell himself, Caleb reasons, as he contemplates how best to go about communicating his desire to Essek, other than simply showing up at the Vermis outpost's door. He could ask Jester to pass the message along the next time she calls him, though his ears immediately burn with the not-inaccurate way she might embellish it. Or one of the Cobalt Soul, if he asks Beau. They would more accurately pass along exactly what he means to say, though with that comes the risk of it not being done in strict confidence. Relations between the Dynasty and Empire are still far from smooth, and Essek's own position is particularly precarious, if the Cobalt Soul were to take up any kind of suspicion from the request. But as it turns out, all his worries and considerations swiftly turn out to be for naught, as one day, while slowly chewing his way through a lonely and rather terrible dinner, Caleb is startled by a sudden wash of magic as Essek teleports himself directly into his living room. He is more dressed up than Caleb has ever seen him before, a veritable riot of swirling cloth and color. Caleb's eyes catch iridescent stars and moons stitched in gold above the deepest blues and purples, as well as gold and cream beneath. When Essek turns to look at him, there is gold on his face, too, painted in sweeping lines across his eyelids, as well as one more drawn down the center of his chin from his lip. He also looks distinctly, visibly shaken. "Oh, good," Essek says, a touch faint as Caleb rockets to his feet, uncaring of what remains of his dinner falls to the floor. "I knew your address, but I wasn't sure if I—" Caleb closes the distance between them in three long strides, hands rising to grasp Essek's elbows, only to then hesitate at the last second. Instead, His fingers hover there awkwardly, above the outermost layer of sheer embroidered cloth. "Essek," he breathes. "You are right on target, my friend. Though I must admit I am a little shocked to see you. Is everything all right?"
"Oh, yes. My apologies. I should have messaged you first. I think...
Essek wavers, his eyes still a little wild in his face. Despite his worry, Caleb waits, giving him the time he needs to continue.
"I think my time in the dynasty is finally done now."
Caleb's hands make contact, alighting on Essek's arms and squeezing. "Did something happen? Are you hurt?" His eyes make a concerned sweep of Essek's form, searching for hidden wounds even as Essek shakes his head.
"No," Essek says. "I mean, yes, I am not hurt, but I..."
He lifts one hand, gripping the back of Caleb's wrists.
"I do not know if I am being overly paranoid or not. I only know I do not wish to go back there again."
Caleb's worry grows regardless.
"Come, sit," he says at once, gently drawing Essek towards the sofa.
With a shove of his foot, he pushes the pieces of black bread, burnt sausage, and thankfully unbroken plate aside.
"Let me make you some tea. Then you can tell me all about it."
He makes to draw away once he has Essek settled, only the hold of slim fingers around his wrist suddenly turns startlingly strong.
"I do not need any tea," Essek says with a shake of his head. "Just stay. Please."
"Of course." Caleb doesn't fight him. He settles down beside Essek, and on impulse shifts his hands to instead cup Essek's own between them. Cool fingers and gold rings, covered by tight silk across the back of Essek's hands and looped around the middle digits, pressed together against his own dry and calloused ones.
"Of course, I will not go anywhere. Thank you."
Essek does not seem to know where to look, lips pressed and trembling. His breathing is a little calmer now that they have sat down, but he's still clearly far from at ease. Caleb cannot stop himself from rubbing a slow circle around his wrist bone with his thumb.
"You look a little overdressed for Isilcross."
Essek laughs, the sound short and startled.
"Yes, I was not. I was in Roshona. The queen summoned me back there yesterday. Unexpectedly."
The question crosses Caleb's lips at once, knowing Essek's fears that the dynasty's suspicions had been turning on him even before they ventured into Cognosa 6 months ago.
I knew this was coming, though the date of the ceremony was moved at the last minute."
Essek swallows. "For the benedictions of our priests on the position of the sun, you see, a storm was seen to be approaching, and the sunlight was a necessary component."
"The ceremony?"
Caleb frowns. He remembers Essek telling them of holy days where the sun's light was allowed to shine down on Roshona. Perhaps this was one of them, and the reason why Essek is so extravagantly dressed right now.
"For the heroes of the war."
Essek's voice trembles as he says it, and oh, Caleb understands now. Or at least he thinks he's beginning to.
"I tried to reason that leaving the outpost so suddenly would be disruptive to its functioning, but she insisted."
"Essek." He tightens the grip of their hands.
"Is it terrible of me,"
Essek whispers, "to feel like it was meant as a personal slight, to be forced to stand at her side and look into the eyes of those men and women, all those who went to war for our nation, losing friends and more in the process. Many of them were injured, permanently disfigured, as a result of my actions. Yet I had to stand there, smile at them, thank them each for the service, and I..."
He lifts his eyes back up, and Caleb can look nowhere else. The line of gold over his eyelids makes them seem larger than usual. "I have known. I know the net is closing in on me. I know my time is limited already. But if they were yet certain of my treachery, I never would have made it out of there, and yet I still..."
"Essek," Caleb says again, commanding his attention. He waits until he is sure that Essek is listening to him.
"Of course it is not terrible for you to feel that way."
Essek's mouth opens, closes. He swallows.
"Oh, how could it not be? I did that to them. I did all of it."
Caleb shakes his head, his grip remaining iron strength. "What would have been terrible would be for you to have been standing there feeling nothing, if you had looked into their eyes and felt not one ounce of guilt or remorse. But the very fact that you came here to me now tells me you do feel those things. You are not the man you were a year ago. You are better."
"Am I?" The 6 years sink. "Or am I just being selfish, only in a different way?"
"Essek, I cannot help but feel that a truly good man would hand himself in, confess his crimes, stand and wait for whatever punishment befalls him."
"It is not selfish to want to live,"
Caleb says, correctly guessing his thoughts. He gently frees one hand, lifting it to cup Essek's cheek instead. "And yes, perhaps your death would make some in the dynasty feel as though justice has been served, but it still would not undo the damage of the war.
not any more than you continuing to live and work for the world's betterment in recompense would. Essex shudders beneath his hand. Caleb cannot help but note that his skin is cool here, too, a fact he had noticed once before, when he last held Essex in the blooming grove and kissed his cheek in farewell. "Caleb," Essex whispers, his eyes briefly closing, "that is..." And if you wish to speak of selfishness, then consider this. I and the rest of the Nine would be very saddened to lose you. After all we have been through together, you are truly one of us now, and you have seen the lengths we will go to for our friends. Essex lets out a soft, almost laugh. Even against the dynasty? Even then. I have great faith in you, Essex Pelis, even if you have none in yourself. Caleb pauses, then adds with a rough quirk of his lips, that, and you still owe me a trip to Aeor. This time, Essex really does chuckle. The sound almost startled, like it had been punched out of him. Of course I would hate to let you down on that front. On any front, I should hope. Caleb continues to smile faintly. You are doing well, Essex. Believe me when I say that, if nothing else. It just takes time. Time, yes, I know. Essex's own hand raises, covering Caleb's on his cheek, a mixture of skin, metal, and cloth. My speciality. Yeah. He breathes shakily. They both do, taking a moment as the tension in him eases just a little and his trembling finally stops. Caleb's thumb is still doing its little circles on Essex's other wrist, forgotten with every passing moment that Essex does not withdraw his hand. But still, I think I am done with the dynasty now. To return there after this. He shakes his head. I cannot do it. You can stay here with me as long as you wish, Caleb says without hesitation. Or any of the Nine. Will they know that you have fled? Not yet. I made my excuses as I usually would. They believe I returned home to my towers, and from there, to go back to Vermas tomorrow. Good. That gives us a little breathing room, then. Essex nods, and with that, finally seems to have realized how close they have gotten. Both his hands slide from their positions against Caleb's, and he leans back a little, away from his touch, as a self-conscious wave seems to steal over him. I feel ridiculous now, sitting here in all this. Would you like something to eat? Caleb offers, retracting his own hands and trying to pretend he doesn't miss Essex's touch immediately. I can't promise anything I make will actually taste good, but perhaps if I summon the tower, the cats can. No. It is fine, thank you, but I am not hungry. That is a relief to Caleb, who had been entertaining the very real fear of accidentally poisoning Essex if he did try to cook for him, as well as thinking about the spilled remains of his own meal on the floor. Then, is there anything else I can get you? Tea, perhaps? Now that you have calmed down a little? He aims for teasing. Or even something a little stronger? Essex smiles. And it is almost like the same small, polite one he always wore back when they first met him in Roshona, only with one key difference. This one is real. At least, Caleb thinks it is. Hot cocoa with whiskey? Caleb snorts despite himself. None of that, I'm afraid. But I do have a very good brandy Veth gave me. Essex dips his head in assent, and after Caleb has retrieved the bottle and cleaned up the mess next to the sofa, they spend a good half hour sipping alcohol in quiet contemplation. Of both their past sins, perhaps, among other things. And when they have finished with that, they slowly begin talking, polite inquiries about their individual studies during their time apart soon dissolving into a passionate discussion of magical theory. In a way, Caleb had almost forgotten how easy it is to talk to Essex. The simple pleasure of speaking to someone who listens to everything he says with not just politeness, but enthusiasm, readily offering his own ideas and observations in return. His friends, bless them, have never truly understood what it is to love magic for magic's sake, rather than as a tool or a divinely gifted ability. But Essex does. Essex does, and that has always been the first and foremost connection between them. The very spark that set them upon this road in the first place. It might be the warmth settling into his gut at the thought that does it, or how his eyes keep drifting back to Essex, sat in all his extravagant finery on Caleb's cheap sofa inside his tiny living room. But on his third glass of brandy, Caleb finally clears his throat and said, "Your outfit is very lovely." Essex stills, his own glass millimeters from his lips. Some of the gold there has already washed off from his drinking, and Caleb cannot help but pay attention to the way he slowly licks his lips before answering, "Thank you. It is very uncomfortable." "Truly," Caleb chuckles, thinking how the Essex of a year ago would never have admitted that. "How many layers is it?" "How many layers do you think it is?" Essex lifts his chin, and oh, there is a challenge Caleb recognizes, as well as a more knowing edge. Caleb debates whether to make a show of counting or just admit that he already has. 9. 9, as it confirms, and his lips tilt up just far enough for one sharp canine to peek out before he swallows what's left of his brandy. A fairly auspicious number, in my experience. And in mine. Caleb twists the round bottom glass in his hand. No pun intended, this time. Essek rewards him with another smile. Nevertheless, I do not think I will be sad to leave this behind. Was? Essek gestures at himself, though Caleb could tell him he hardly needs to do so, seeing as how he already has his full attention. He doesn't, though, simply allowing his eyes the free pass to observe Essek from head to toe. All this, Essek elaborates, the layers, the mountains of cloth, the rigidity. Even when I'm at my most casual, it is often at least an hour of getting ready. For this ensemble you see here, it took a whole two. Then there is the delicacy with which one must move when wearing so many contending fabrics. Always slowly, always with grace and demurity. I do not know how the Umavi stand it, wearing a full 12, when I wish to pull my hair out at 6, let alone 9. Truly, Caleb says, drawn in by his sudden talkativeness. I remember throwing at least one spectacular tantrum on a holy day as a child when my nurse tried to dress me, before realizing my opinion meant nothing in such matters. Essek eyes the brandy bottle again, and Caleb would offer him a refill, only he's too busy listening. The dynasty is set in their ways, bogged down in ritual and tradition, and very unlikely to change any time soon. Our fashion is just one symptom of it, a trend started over 1,000 years ago, now held up as unwritten law. In a way, I envied you and your friends from the beginning, with how easily and lightly you bore yourselves, free of all those expectations, as well as the comfort of your clothing. Our friends, Caleb corrects by rote. Then, emboldened, he adds, That is very interesting to hear. I myself have always admired the intricacy of your outfits, the system by which your people communicate so much through cloth alone, though I admit I still don't think I came anywhere close to understanding it in the time we had there. Didn't you? Essek asks. And for a moment, the hand not holding his brandy glass slides up to lightly brush the fastening of the mantle at his throat. Caleb abruptly feels his breath catch. Essek, may I borrow some clothes while I am here? The sudden whiplash has Caleb feeling the same way he did the first time he ever took a punch to the face. The only clothes I have are my own, he says, before realizing how foolish that sounds. Of course they are. This is his home. I know what you meant. Essek's eyes meet as evenly. But still, may I? At least to rest in? Caleb swallows, trying very hard not to think of Essek Thalis wearing one of his shirts. Yeah, of course you can. There is also, only one bedroom. But you may take it as you are the guest. I will sleep down here. That is not necessary. Caleb shakes his head. Please, I insist. Essek looks like he is weighing up the merits of arguing further versus accepting what his host is offering him before finally dipping his head in assent. Thank you. I appreciate it. It is nothing, mein Freund. I can show you the way now if you are ready for bed. I would not argue against it. It has been a very long day. Essek smiles faintly. Though if I may ask one more favor of you. Absolutely. Anything. Will you help me undress? Something explodes in the back of Caleb's brain. Heat, like a dying star, like a sunburst. He feels it reflected on his face with the sudden warming of his skin, and fears every other inch of him has now turned scarlet as well. Excuse me? The tips of Essek's ears have darkened, the only sign that he himself is not unaffected by what he is proposing. Outfits such as these are not made to be put on or taken off alone. Usually we would have a retainer, but here Essek is by himself, except for Caleb. A better man would suggest that Essek summon a mage hand to do the work for him. Right now, though, Caleb is not a better man. It already feels like they have begun to veer off script in the last couple minutes, so why not here, too? Of course I will help you, he says. And when he sets his glass down on the coffee table, so does Essek. When Caleb stands, Essek copies him, and when he starts to walk upstairs, Essek is right on his heels, noticeably moving on his own 2 feet, rather than floating. The full flow of fabric dragging in his wake makes a whispering sound on every step, and Caleb's heart hammers away inside his chest, realizing that after months upon months of ridiculous pining over what is hidden, he is finally about to get a hands-on experience. Though exactly how far and to what extent, he doesn't dare assume. The very fact that this is happening at all feels like an incredible extension of trust. Caleb does not want to ruin it, even though his traitorous heart hungers for so much more. His bedroom is as small and cramped as the rest of the house. A double bed takes up much of the space, covered in a large patchwork quilt, some squares of which have little pink dicks embroidered upon them. Jester and Veth's combined housewarming gift, and one he never felt self-conscious about until now. Then he thinks that if Essek does notice the unorthodox decoration, which he surely will, he will understand the origin at once and be charmed by it, rather than offended. After all, there is no one in the world who does not love Jester Lavore. From his dresser, he pulls out one of his nightshirts, making a small show of laying it out ready on the bed for Essek, as a valet would. Only when he turns back to Essek himself, it is to be struck stiff again by how short he is without the floating. How compact! Especially as he has already towed off his shoes, standing in white stockinged feet, Caleb has very inappropriate thoughts about on the bare floorboards. His nightshirt will surely drown him once he has it on. But for that to happen, Caleb has to undress him first. He swallows. Are you ready to begin? Essek turns his head from where he has been looking around Caleb's bedroom. From the bed to the small dresser, heavy drawn curtains, dull-colored rug and armchair, including a cushion with, yes, another dick on it. Are you? The challenge is back in his eyes, quick as a flash, and Caleb wonders if this is the alcohol at work, or just Essek. Certainly he does not think this is how either of them imagined their day's ending when they woke up this morning. Just tell me where you would like me to start. Here, of course. Essek's fingers slide over his throat again, against the fastening of his mantle. I'm sure you can work the rest of it out from there. Caleb steps closer to him, closer and closer, until he is right in Essek's space. The floorboards creak under his feet as he slowly lifts his hands up to the intricate catches, then lets them linger there, just for a moment, watching Essek's face and reaction. His pupils are dilated, which Caleb tries not to think about. There is a flush to his skin that betrays he is perhaps not as confident as he is trying to seem. But as Caleb's fingers start to work, he says nothing, seemingly content to stand still and wait as he attends him. The mantle itself takes work, heavy and intricate. Caleb is not sure what else to do but put it on the armchair once he is done, where it looks fairly ridiculous. An ornate indication of high political station within a lower-class Rexentrum bedroom. Essek's shoulders are much slimmer without the metal, which Caleb prefers, and he can get a far better idea on how to go forwards from here. The sheer, shimmering layer on top, chiffon, if Caleb is not mistaken, is easy to remove. Sleeveless, it simply slides off Essek's shoulders, taking the faux approximation of the night sky with it. Caleb folds it as carefully as he can, intrigued by the beauty of the garment still, and not entirely convinced Essek would like to see it treated poorly yet, despite his earlier stated bitterness. He is a man who likes fine things, of that Caleb is certain, and he may still find some use for the individual pieces, even if he never chooses to wear them all together again. Beneath the chiffon layer comes a deep blue, almost black velvet robe, similar to a cassock, but slitted on each side from Essek's ankles to his hips and fastened asymmetrically. The sleeves are in a hanging style, split draping from his shoulders and long enough to trail across the floor, meaning they do not cover up the arms of every other garment beneath them. There's a sash around Essek's waist that he has to circle behind him to undo the intricate knot of, before then stepping around to his front again to pull apart the ties holding it closed. They start from the throat, going all the way down to his hip, and when the robe slips from his shoulders, Essek sighs, and Caleb swallows. Already he seems lighter, down to 7 layers, and the proximity to hearing that sound does terrible things to Caleb's constitution. It already feels as though there is sweat running down his back, and he still has so much further to go. Another robe now, sewn nearly identical to the first, and a dusky purple like the underbellies of clouds at dawn, except that it is a solid piece rather than a wraparound, and cut a little longer, so that the embroidered hem will peek out beneath the ends of the darker robe on top. There are laces here that Caleb must undo, in addition to the sash, right at the front of Essek's collarbone so he can pull it over his head, an act that ruffles his hair and almost sets him laughing when he sees the resulting look in Caleb's face. Managing all right so far? Caleb bites his lip, because the answer is both a yes and a no. Well enough, though I have yet to encounter any part you could not take off yourself. Keep going. Essex says nonchalantly, stretching his arms out, and after taking a deep breath and laying the second robe to rest, Caleb does. The next layer is a wrapped shirt, ending at Essex's thighs and made of a blue damask that reminds him of the Lucidian Ocean at its deepest. It shimmers in the magical light he has summoned to help them see by as he works, and the material is so soft and smooth that it actually feels like water in Caleb's hands. Briefly forgetting himself, Caleb finds his fingers stroking the fabric over Essex's waist where the belt is, at least until he hears the man cough quietly and remembers the task at hand. This top has bell-bottom sleeves that run to the middle of Essex's forearms, and once the belt is undone, the whole thing is easily removed for Caleb to get to the next layer and now he begins to realize what Essex meant. The next shirt, sleeves just long enough to surpass those of the one above, is tight and form-fitting, made of a soft cream fabric that borders on gold, and actually has gold thread woven into it in a starburst pattern, with even more extensive detailing around the cuffs. It is excessively fastened, with buttons made of what looks like to be highly polished rose gold shell, and they run not just the length of Essex's sleeves from cuff to shoulder, but up the middle of his back as well. What is the purpose of this? Caleb asks, as he circles round to look at the tightrope buttons, bewildered as to why anyone would do such a thing where it will never be seen. Fashion, is Essex's answer, and his voice sounds breathier by the minute. Caleb is in the middle of running his fingers up the length of Essex's spine when he realizes, and all at once, the room feels both too small and too hot. They are now at the same level they were when they completed the spell for Veth, only it feels so, so much more intimate. I will start with your sleeves, Caleb says, when he manages to remember how to speak again. He takes the first of Essex's arms in hand, raising it to a level he knows he will be comfortable working at. The knowledge of his slender wrists and fingers is nothing new, but it feels like they are warmer now, so much closer to the surface. Every button Caleb undoes unveils more of the garment beneath it, gold and shimmering, and he has to grit his teeth against the sharp bolt of desire the sight sends sparking through his belly. He wants to do something impetuous, impulsive even. He wants to perhaps say to hell with preservation and break every button in his wake to free Essex from his prison. They would scatter across the floor like broken gems, he thinks, and then. One arm is freed, before Caleb moves to the other. Essex's cheeks are very dark and dusky purple now, and he determinedly looks straight ahead at the completely blank wall in front of him, like it is the most fascinating thing in the world. Caleb thinks he might be ready to die by the time he moves to Essex's back and lifts his hand to the first of the fastenings there, his fingers inevitably brushing against the shorn ends of Essex's soft white hair as he does so. Being taller than him here is deadly, Caleb thinks, as Essex bows his head forward. The collars of every layer beneath are lower than this one, meaning the skin at the nape of his neck is laid completely bare. He can see the first bump of Essex's spine at the top of his back before it disappears into the golden fabric, and the urge for Caleb to lean forward and press his lips there is almost irresistible. So irresistible, in fact, that he gets close enough that his breath huffs against Essex's neck before he catches himself and is able to watch long pointed ears tremble as a result. Caleb, Essex sighs, a full body shiver running through him. This one is done, Caleb whispers, before helping him slide it off from his front. He thought he was done, being astounded by the variety of Essex's garments at this point. He is not. The shimmering gold top is all one piece, but belted in by a small corset around Essex's middle. Ah, that is... Caleb's mouth is suddenly terribly dry. To fit everything on as it is meant to be seen, sometimes sacrifices must be made. Essex raises his gaze back up to him, and with that he reaches forward, drawing Caleb's hand around his waist, the crisscrossing laces behind him. You can undo it like this, yes? I believe so, but surely it would be more expedient to do it from... Like this, please, Essex says, and Caleb is hopeless to resist him. Usually so skillful, his fingers now feel like they lack any finesse. The position Essex has drawn him into means there are only bare inches left between them as Caleb works, undoing the fastenings and slowly loosening the laces, stretch by stretch. He knows he has done enough when Essex groans suddenly, his head tilting backwards in what is visible relief. It puts Caleb's line of sight directly on his lips, the slightly musk-gold paint from the bottom one still running down his chin. Caleb is filled with the sudden and violent urge to ruin it completely. "Essek," he says, voice now distinctly strangled. At the sound of his name, Essek drops his head back down. His violet eyes are warm, his pupils still dilated, and he licks his mouth as he sighs once more.
"I think it would be very appropriate for you to kiss me now."
Made stupid by longing, it takes Caleb's usually keen intellect a few dragging seconds to catch up with the words, but when it does...
Oh, I think perhaps I have died," he responds faintly, "or else this is a dream."
Essek coughs a soft laugh, his fingers winding their way around Caleb's suspenders to close what little is left of the distance between them.
"In which case, that would make two of us. Nevertheless, I would still like for you to kiss me."
Well, with an invitation like that... Caleb bends at the waist, even as Essek stretches up onto his toes. His mouth is very soft when Caleb kisses him, like the silk he is wrapped in, and Caleb shudders, even as he moves one hand to cup the back of Essek's head, holding him in place as he explores. Kiss after kiss after kiss. Caleb learns the shape and taste of Essek's mouth as well as his own, feels the sharp sting of his eye teeth when Essek gets a little bolder and bites his bottom lip, followed by the soothing swipe of his tongue. He has fantasized about this for longer than he has ever been willing to admit, and now he has it. The warm press of a body against his own, soft kisses and desire reciprocated in ways he never thought to have again, that he never thought to allow himself to have again in this lifetime with everything he has done. It is so much, too much, that almost as soon as it begins he fears it will end, and that pushes Caleb to kiss further, longer, harder, to tug on Essek's hair in a way that makes him squeak adorably and arch into Caleb like a cat. Only the inevitable burning in his lungs forces him to back off eventually, as desperation leaves far too little room for the necessity of breath. "Caleb," Essek exhales roughly, their foreheads stay pressed together as their chests heave. "Caleb, you are sublime," Caleb tells him. His voice too is roughened, and his accent noticeably thicker, the way it always is when he's distracted. Essek must still understand him, though, as Caleb feels the way he smiles against his mouth. "High praise." "Deserved," Caleb assures him, already wanting to begin again, even as his chest begs another moment. He feels the tension release as Essek lets go of one of his suspenders, and a moment later, slim fingers with gold-painted nails graze his cheek.
"Would you like to finish?" There must be some disconnect still lingering in his brain, because Caleb hears the words and yet doesn't understand them. At least, not as they are probably meant. The white hot surge of desire in him rises upwards, even as his mouth forms a startled, "What?" Caleb cannot see Essek's smile from this close, but he can only imagine it is wicked as those fingers curl and scratch against the tight crop of his beard. Perhaps Essek feels other things from Caleb also, given how closely pressed together they are. There is little here that such proximity and Caleb's own simple clothing can hide. "Undressing me, Caleb," he says. "Would you like to finish undressing me? You still have 3 layers left to go after this one." Caleb could answer verbally. Probably should, in fact. But instead he finds his hands back at the laces of the short corset around Essek's middle, yanking apart what is left of its fastenings before throwing it aside. From there he grasps the hem of the golden top, pulling it up and over Essek's head in one swift movement, now forgetting the care he meant to give each garment in his desperation. Essek's laughter, as he does so, is a sound Caleb thinks will stay with him forever. "Yah," he says, drawing back just enough to look at him. What is left is 2 layers of soft cotton, one white and the other pale lavender, as well as the shimmering sheer gold silk closest to Essek's skin. His trousers, which Caleb has not paid attention to until now, are high-waisted and loose except for where they are fitted at his ankles, matching the gold cream of 2 layers ago, with the same rose-gold shell buttons holding them close to the hips. "Yah, I would." "Good," Essek says, raising his arms up to help him along. And as Caleb leans down to get a better look at what he is doing, Essek sighs and turns his head so that his mouth is just close enough to whisper into his ear, "Because when you are finished, then it is my turn." The next morning, Caleb wakes to the sight of Essek watching him, one hand propping up his chin while the other rests on Caleb's chest. His jewelry, which he had not removed along with everything else last night, sparkles in what little light has managed to creep around the edges of the curtains, hollowing his white hair in gold. Caleb had forgotten that elves do not need to sleep so much. Or, well, actually sleep
sleep at all. But Essek does not seem perturbed at having had to wait for him. Not if the soft smile he wears on his lips is anything to go by, as well as the first kiss he leans down to give him. Slow, tender, and deep. "Are you quite sure you're done with wearing Dynasty fashions?" Caleb asks him, once he has recovered enough to remember how words work, and Essek immediately laughs. "I knew you were going to say that, did you?" Essek smiles, reaching out to tuck a strand of Caleb's hair behind his ear. "For months, you stared at my wrists like a starving animal." Then, at Caleb's startled look, adds, "Do you really think you were being subtle about it?" Caleb flushes, a reaction that is rapidly becoming his default state. Those wrists, and the forearms attached to them, are completely bare now when they slide free of the sleeves of Essek's borrowed nightshirt. And he has the sudden sense memory of laying kiss after kiss along them last night, as well as tracing the dark pathways of veins with his tongue. "Ah, maybe. Then I am sorry to burst your bubble." "I really don't think you are," Caleb counters, before kissing him again. Then he looks at the veritable mountain of cloth thrown over his armchair. "But really, I can't persuade you to..." Essek snorts, shoving at his head. "Maybe if you are very, very nice to me, I will think about it, but only for special occasions." "For special occasions," Caleb echoes, grinning. "That sounds more than fair." Then his smile fades as he keeps watching Essek, tracking the gold lines on his eyelids and what remains of the gold smear on his chin. "This is really real, isn't it?" Essek's hand cups his cheek, thumb rubbing at his lips. "I certainly hope so. And you are staying. For as long as you will have me. What about all your things? Your belongings? There must be some you wish..." Essek stops him with a kiss. "We can pick them up on our way to Aeor." "Aeor, yes. Now? Do you have any reason why not? My position at Vermas will only remain intact so long if we wish to use it as a launching-off point." Caleb thinks, then shakes his head before surging upwards, rolling them over so Essek is on his back beneath him. "Only one." He kisses him, slipping his hand down to start pulling up his nightshirt. "You know, you will have to wear layers there still, for the sake of the cold." Essek raises his eyebrows at him, snorting even as he shifts his legs apart. His breath against Caleb's mouth is a warm slip of heat, matching in intensity the wicked glint now kindling in his violet eyes. "Yes," he says archly, enough to send Caleb's heart hammering in his chest. "And so will you." The end.
Taste, you'll never be the same. This is an ordinary, this is a 40 karat cake.